Okay. So new album right now. So 2 years ago you released Info the Broken. What's new? What's the if you could summarize these 2 years?
Yeah, I mean it's been 2 years where we have been doing a lot of different things. We have been playing a lot, but also playing a lot on our own terms. You know, we have been very sort of particular about the things that we want to do. We don't want to wear ourselves out again and end up where we were once before. And that sort of set the tone and the quality for our work also. You know, we didn't do everything. We didn't do like 8 week tours on lousy demands, but we only do the things where we feel good.
That's the difference, or that's an advantage you can get if you, when your career grow and you have now a fan base, that you can be more, I would say, picky, but in the right sense, saying
sure.
It's no more, you know, you can record more quality shows that just show to be able to be on the road and then make things.
Yeah, that's it. We want to be able to bring Evergrey in the best quality way to as many people as possible for as long time as possible. So in order for us to do that, we need to be very, as you said, picky with the, there's so many offers in the world today, and people are just wanting to have things cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and at the same time that doesn't really work with things when things are getting more expensive for us. So, you know, it's traveling to places is a big cost, bringing shit over, it's a big cost, so we need to get paid, of course. So.
Sure. Okay. I might be wrong, but from my understanding, the band kind of in the past reached a peak, the period with the Last Plan, and you had a whole. It seemed that most of the metal media were interested by the band, and you had a large coverage.
Mm-hmm.
How would you compare the band right now compared to this period? So, was it first true that at that time the band reached a peak?
No.
So that's
actually, the peak was sales-wise and media coverage-wise was maybe on the Monday Morning album, where also a lot of fans thought we made our worst album. Not a lot, but a few. But at the same time, also got a lot of new fans into the band, you know. So at that time, we were sort of in the crossroads of where do we want to take Evergrey in a way. And I mean, honestly, it's 20 years, it's 10 albums, it's one every other year, it's and a bunch of other fucking stuff, you know, so it's... And now, for the last album, we reached a new peak. So the last album peaked more than Monday Morning, which was... I mean, if it hadn't, then I guess that would have been the last album in a way. Because that was sort of... When Jonas and Henry came back, it would have been fucking ridiculous if everybody thought it was, oh man, this sucks, you know, and the sales would have gone down.
Maybe it was the case for him, sort of broken, but I didn't notice at that time. Your own on Facebook, on your website, you try to push for pre-sale.
Mm-hmm.
How important now is it for a band like Evergrey to already kind of get the attention with pre-sale from the album?
Super important. It pays for our whole year. In terms of personal costs, and it does, and it's our true fans that support us from the beginning. They don't know what they're buying. It's like, and I mean, we're so fucking great to have a lot of those. We sell a lot on Facebook alone,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I would sort of encourage every band to do: push that, because people want to support you. They want to hear the music. They want to make sure that you are able to come and whatever. So, I mean, we're just smiling every day, seeing all the orders coming in. It's like it's on fire, really. And for the films, for the broken, that's when we tried that the first time. I mean, really, in a structured way. And we said, fuck, man, we can now we can be less picky because we have already money that we can pay for this and that and whatever. So.
Okay, so but with your experience, and as you mentioned, 20 years with Evergrey, so you have this trend that the market evolves, change, mutates, for the good or for the bad?
In
retrospect?
In retrospect, I would say, of course, it would be better if we were in 1982, but we're not. And at the same time, Evergrey was not releasing albums in 1982, but we started releasing albums in 1998, but we had our first deal in 96. So we have been with it, selling and seeing the market going down, but also selling in different ways, and when also touring became more important for a band to survive. So we've done our fair part of that work, and now sales are not going down anymore. And for the Hymns for the Broken album, our sales went up while the market still was going down. But now the market has flattened out, which is good, because now people can sort of calculate with, okay, this is as bad as it gets, violence are fucking through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's looking good. I think the world has sort of adapted the new market, the music world.
And the pre-sale element, for example, also the experience you had, as you mentioned, with the Hymns for the Broken, mm-hmm. put you in better position to work with your label? Because you could say, okay, you know that even pre-sale we reached such level, and so...
Honestly, I told them, because I mean, this is our last album with AFM. Didn't say final, but this is our last on this contract.
Right. So you signed for two?
Yeah.
Two, right.
And, I mean, we made more money on Facebook last time than we did in advance. So, then again, what...
Would you reach the cross the border and go direct selling? But do you think?
I think it's that there's a lot of opportunities for us now, which is a great place to be in. We could ask for a pretty decent advance. I mean, money wise, that would
full crowdfunding system to even to fund the recording.
That's what we do always. We want to have that insured, all the videos, all the recordings, all the producers, and all the time, you know, but now maybe it's time to do something different. We'll see.
We'll see what happens for the next one. So once again, to come back to the Hymns for the Broken period, if you had to synthesize this whole period, these 2 years, is there one souvenir, one event that pops in your mind, synthesizing everything?
I think the overall general thing is that Evergrey went up two notches, maybe in people attendance. And as you said,
yeah.
Our career has been going like this, but not like this.
Yeah, no, yeah, sure.
But it's been better times and worse times. But now we really noticed a high. I mean, we even sold out shows in Germany. We never done that before. So it's like, what happened? Germany suddenly got it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Don't mention a war. No, I'm kidding. But I know. But I mean, that was the overall vibe that we went with. Okay, so fucking people understand us all of a sudden, and we felt we didn't do anything different.
Yeah.
We just did another album. Of course, we were in a positive vibe with, you know, everybody liking to make music again, and I guess that sort of really reflects. And one other thing is really important, that we don't take each other for granted anymore. I mean, it sounds like it is a fucking relationship. It's one of the weirdest relationships you can be in, being in a relationship with four other men. You know, it's like
and living, together in close environment for weeks. I mean, I'm not sure a lot of people would appreciate that or even be able to face that, even with their closest friend.
No. Fortunately, these are my closest friends, so they know, and we have learned when to, you know, give each other room and space, and even in a tour bus you can step away and let people be by themselves when they need to. So yeah. Stuff like that you learn through the years and with age and you know, logic thinking that you're not able to do when you're 21 maybe. So
right.
Well, some might, but we weren't.
So 2 years between the last record, do you think it's the natural rhythm for the band? You would like obviously before, I mean, it was the life of the band was difficult, was shaky, could change lineup, everything.
Mm.
If everything goes smooth and you stabilize the band,
mm.
would you think 2 years for each album, between two albums, would be your natural rhythm?
I mean, it is our natural rhythm, it has been for 20 years, so, but it's, I think it's a, since we're not selling millions, but at the same time, we don't have to make music, it's a choice we do, you know, it's a choice we make. And we want to, as I said before also, we want to make music on our terms, and when we can do that, it's pretty fucking obvious to me that that's when we sound best. But when people around us try to, or start to, take advantage of us just to make a buck that day, or not thinking long term, then everybody either not work with you. That's the choice we can make today, but before we couldn't, you know. Or we will make sure that it happens on our terms. So if we want to make another album in 2 years, I would say that it's a feasible thought. But hopefully we will also tour a lot for this album, so I don't know. And then we might need maybe like a year to write the next one as well.
In terms of your own creativity to write songs, do you work by cycles? So you need, like, you focus on, you release an album, you record, you release, promo, tour, and then you need to rest like weeks or months away from everything and then come back, and then your source of creativity is back, or how does it work?
It's also different for me and for Jonas, for instance. Jonas writes all the time. So every time when we get together again for the new album, he has a lot of material. I have a little bit of a material. But then also, that's when my work starts, because I do the vocal melodies and the sort of... We produce the songs together, me and Jonas, usually. He has this usually very structured patterns of music that sounds like a song. But then I go in and sort of... Then I come in with fresh ears, and he has 100% trust in me, so... So it's different, but for me, I need to push the button. Okay, September 1st, we need to start the album. October 14th, we need to have done 5 songs. So very, very structured.
So you put yourself goals.
Yeah.
So I need, in terms of time frame, I need after 1 month, I need that. After 2 months, I need that. And you work, and so you say, okay, I start the morning, I take my coffee, and then I went to my own studio, and then I work and see what's happening. Okay.
9 o'clock, boom.
All right.
5 o'clock, out. And then because also, there's also usually like 2 weeks or something in our creative process where nothing happens. Nothing gets down. Everything sounds like shit. But those 2 weeks are the most important weeks, because you have to get through those. And then it's like opening a tap, pouring out. What the fuck? What are we going to do this? Put it in that box. And so now I think we have, honestly, I think we have, without exaggerating, I think we have 35 song ideas that we haven't used.
Well, I mean, leftovers from the...
Not leftovers, but the songs that...
Bites and pieces?
Big pieces of music.
Already structured.
With drums and guitars. Right. And but not because they were leftovers, but because they didn't fit this album.
Right.
Or even for the broken album.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that we're like, fuck, we gotta use this.
There's a lot of pressure in the attic yet to be released. For you sometimes, maybe in 5 years,
maybe
3 years. Never.
Exactly. Or maybe never. Some things need to be written and never used to, so...
Okay. Once again, it might be a cliché, but I have the feeling that when a band decided, okay, we have to work on a new album, you gather all together, and you chat, or discuss where you want to go, what's the orientation you want to do, musically speaking. So obviously, you base your work on what you have, the songs, the structures you might have, Jonas and everything. But also in terms of the idea, the lyrics you want to go to, does it happen like that? And if it happened like that, what was the result of this brainstorming for the new record?
It happens like that. We first have a meeting of brainstorming when we're gonna do things and how we're gonna do them. Then the creative process starts. Like for this album, me and Jonas wrote 2 songs together first. That were called M83-1 and M83-2, because there is a French band called M83 that we were super influenced by their keyboard. Right?
Yeah, sure. It's electro.
Yeah, exactly. And then they also wrote the theme track together with a girl called Susanne Sundfer for the Oblivions movie. Mm.
Yeah.
And that started the creative process for us for this album. It started with the sound that Jonas made on the keyboard.
It's pretty far, the final result is pretty far from the soundtrack of Oblivion.
Yes, but exactly. But the vibe of that, this interstellar vibe, that was what was created there. And then we started looking at all these movies, Prometheus and Interstellar and The Martian and blah, 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 whatever. And
sci-fi stuff.
Yes, sci-fi stuff. And we wrote music and I wrote lyrics, this love story, you know, that took place in this interstellar world. And we were... I get goosebumps now when I talk about it, because we were so into this world that it felt we were there, you know, and we couldn't imagine a more desolate place in the world without and like being on, I being on one planet and the person I love being on another with light years in between us, and we're orbiting around us and we can never connect, and all these thematic ideas I had in my head. And then we all of a sudden realized that fuck, all of these movies are recorded on Iceland. We have to go to Iceland and record our videos. And we did. So we recorded 3 videos there. And we finally, in a way, finally, I would say, we have made super attempts of making, you know, these big conceptual ideas with lesser budgets, you know. Mm-hmm. Now we put everything we had into this album. And I'm so fucking eager for people to see the videos. I'm like a kid at Christmas, because the vibe, if you don't get the vibe then, and the music, if you don't like it then, you won't fucking like it. That's it, so move on.
If I tell you that the diving into the new record is difficult.
Yes.
Compare, for example, to Into the Broken, where you have obvious strong songs.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there, you're entering a world, complex, dark, as usual. And you need like three, four times to kind of starting to dive into the thing. So first, would you agree? And after that, how do you find when you work? Is it important for you to one way or the other to open a little door for the listener to enter your music? Or you say that's what we provide. Do your best to dive in.
Now, well, in a perfect world, I would like for everyone to have their hour of solitude with this album. I would not like for them to put it on Spotify first and randomize the track order or whatever, because since we have the cinematic idea of the, that nobody might get at all, but since we do have that idea, it's important for us that we at least say to people that this is our idea. We would love for you to sort of join in this world. It's not a world where everything is McDonald's super fast delivered. It's and Evergrey is not about that. Films for the Broken was not about that either, but it was more accessible in a more sort of straightforward way. But this album is the same, I would say, as Humans for the Broken, but it's more complex.
Yeah.
And the complexity lies within the structure of the songs, but when you come to the choruses are there. So they are the same, but getting to that. So we're portraying life in this album. On every album. But on this album, it's really very much so. So it's all these ups and downs, all the irregularities, all the immoral thoughts you have, all the clashes within, you know, where you question yourself, is this me or is it not, you know, and these things are not easy. I mean, it's and the same thing is for the music, as you said. You can't just jump in and expect to be sort of devoured by easiness. That's not it. That's
yeah,
not
for that, go to pop or something else. But
exactly. But what I wanted to say with the Spotify thing, and even saying that we want you to listen to the album in the correct order and from one to the last.
Yeah, and the best thing to lie down to put your helmet, sound stuff on your ears.
Yeah.
Close your eyes and try to dive. The magic will happen. One
yeah.
To the other.
And also, as you said, be courageous enough to listen to it 2-3 times more, and then hopefully it will click. It has, probably. It sounds like it for people that talk to me. But what I wanted to say that on the other hand, you could also put on any song on the album on Spotify, and it will still represent the album. So I'm a
bit biased. As you mentioned, I mean, the track order has a meaning. It's on purpose. So there's a story there.
Yeah.
So better to follow your. For the first time, follow your
idea. If you're that kind of music listener,
yeah.
Some people aren't. Some people think that the lyrics are not important, and I accept that.
Yeah.
So okay, it's fine.
Is that possible to have a bright, joyful, happy Evergrey album ever? Oh.
I think like the aftermath on the last album and the Storm Within on this album, I think that's as happy as it will get. I mean, everybody's not about writing happy songs, but it's, I think what we have sort of accomplished with the last two albums, this one as well, is that sort of mixing that little twist of hope, at least, this light in the tunnel.
Yeah, but you know the light in the tunnel can be trained.
Yeah, and the light in the tunnel on this album is further away than it was on Hymns for the Broken. So,
but on a general meaning, do you find more creativity in the pain, suffering, mourning than
sunshine and rocking?
Yeah, or the birds singing?
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that's also. I think as a creative soul, you're sort of tuned into one thing, and that's got to do with who you are, upbringing wise. And I think it's hard to fake 10 albums of feeling miserable and lonely and empty.
Yeah, but you're a joyful chap. I mean,
and probably because I have had my outlets in music. Sounds like a cliche, but I mean.
So you're emphasizing the therapeutic dimension of the music creation?
For me, yes, absolutely. It's something, and it's an entity within me that I need to get out, because if I don't, I feel unhappy. It's like people wanting to exercise or people wanting to, I don't know, be creative. It's a magic thing. I mean, music is one of those things the universe can't explain. As with tears.
Okay. How did, in general, especially for the Storm Within, how did you work with the cover artist? So first, who's that? Is that still Matthias Nora?
No, it's Carlos Fides.
Okay.
From Brazil.
You already worked with him?
Nope. Never, first time. Okay. And honestly, he's like we've been working with, in my opinion, of course, the best before.
It's, so you find him on DeviantArt, or you?
He found me three albums ago.
Uh-huh.
Been nagging, and I've been on my ass for three albums.
All right.
It's like, fuck it, okay, let's do it. What do you want to do? And I told him about the story, and he started sending me these beautiful images. Like, whoa, he got everything.
The final one is the first idea?
No, I don't know if you didn't see the booklet.
No.
Every booklet page is like a cover. It's
I think the whole artwork for the record and the sleeve design, everything.
Everything.
Right.
Everything is. I mean, honestly, we should have been paying 15,000 euro for this, because it's 10 covers plus everything else. But every lyric has its own. Picture.
Are you you're managing the cover artist in general? Imagine the fact that's a collective effort, collective idea, or it's your idea?
No, from the band, I mean.
Yeah.
No, those things usually I do since they coincide with the lyrics, but then of course I tell them this is what it is. If anybody has like very strong opinion against it, then of course we have to do something about it. But everybody was like, wow.
It's kind of. It's getting back to the covers we were used to for Evergrey. So compared to for the Broken, which was very bright and I would say almost unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Any hidden message there or?
No, I mean it's like. I mean we work very closely, me and Carlos, back and forth. Now try to move this, move that star and that, you know, on a very very like particular level. What was the question?
So you mentioned it, you shot three videos.
Mm-hmm.
For what I found, you have the Paradox of the Flame,
mm-hmm.
I suppose the Distance,
mm-hmm.
The third one being?
The Impossible.
All right.
And the fourth one being In Orbit. But that was not shot, and that is not shot yet.
Yeah.
Okay. It will be on.
Still with Patrick Wells?
Yeah.
Even the fourth one?
Yes.
All right.
Always.
So you worked with him again, and it seems to seem very important because you were pretty satisfied by his creativity.
Yeah.
Is that a necessary pain, or it's a nice exercise, for your point of view?
To work with him?
No, to shoot video clips in general. Because we have the idea, especially when you're on top of this hard stuff for King of Error,
yeah.
you play the song, I don't know, 50 times, but at some point it can be...
It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
It's, but, yeah, I mean, a lot of things in the creative process is a pain in the ass. But we do it for the outcome, you know, we do it for ourselves. And then like soon, in September, it's not our album anymore. I mean, it's not our album anymore either, because you heard it now, so... It's a lot of fucking work and a lot of things that are very unpleasant. And the most fun part is when you are writing it. Recording it is not necessarily super fun. Even though we'd like the vibe in the studio, but you know, it's mixed feelings. I think recording, I think writing the stuff is what we enjoy the absolute most, and playing it live.
But it's kind of strange, once again, on the business side. So in the 80s and 90s, it was so strong because you had MTV, VH1, everything. After that, it went down because no one thought the TV channel was not that big.
Mm.
Now you have YouTube, you have a lot of, right? And so it seems that now the market is still asking for a video.
Mm.
It's kind of weird. It's super
weird.
Movement. So now in 2016, it went back to being important. Tool to make the band known, or
for sure. I mean, we have done
promotion.
I mean, of course, we have had, since me and Patrick are friends. We are, I mean, we are sort of creative outlets for each other. I help him. I come with a lot of ideas for his videos with us. That's how the work needs to be, because he's usually a very expensive video director. But when I create all these ideas and I come with a full, you know, sort of done package, arranged, then it's easier for him to be cheap. Burr. Not cheap. But yeah, it's super important. I think Evergrey is also a very visual band. It's a band that, I mean, I always wanted to sort of create a vision for your inner eye, and I would love for Evergrey to be sort of a cinematic experience, and if we can help with the visions and have the means to do it, why not?
But even in the past, for the time of In Search of Truth, did you shoot 4 videos for one album?
In Search of Truth, Master Plan. That was it, I guess.
I mean, once again, you reached a new peak. Saying a lot of people might say video clips are dead and useless. And now, as I mentioned, in 2016, you even provide you shoot 4 for one album. That's crazy. I mean, it's a real cycle. I mean, go down, disappear, then come back.
It's also a push from the label side, of course. And let's not kid ourselves. I mean, they want to.
They want that.
They, yeah.
At some point, they say for a long time, years ago, they said it's useless or you don't fund anything, and now they say we want videos.
Yeah, but we have a very structured business plan throughout.
Okay.
We will release all the videos, except the 4th one, before the album is out. So, which gives you that song. When you buy the single, you get that song, and you can look at the video and. Then sort of you have listened to half of the album already when the album comes out, which is a great marketing tool.
It's good. I mean, if it's once again, there's a modification, a mutation of the business. Good.
Yeah, I like it.
We'd like to finish our interview, because it's almost time, with a short quiz, just a few questions.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe difficult to ask, your least favorite song from Evergrey.
Ah. My least favorite song.
The one that don't want to play.
I'm going through the first album.
Yeah.
Nothing on the third and fourth. And now, well, I have a song that was better on the demo, which has bugged me for a long. It's called "The Unforgivable" on the Recreation Day album. Something with the choirs on the chorus.
One day we'll
release the demo. Roger?
Yes?
Can you ask her to turn down the music?
Again?
Because it's fucking...
bad.
It's fucking... it's fucking bad.
The song you would have loved to have composed?
One with you two. Comfortably Numb with Pink Floyd.
Right.
so many songs with Pink Floyd.
All right. So obviously there's a guest on the record, which is Flo Jensen from Nightwish.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from her, if you could pick any guest dead or alive, who would you choose?
David Gilmour.
Right. So still okay. Huge Pink Floyd fan. Maybe it was already happened, but you had the opportunity to play a gig everywhere in the world. Where would you want to go? Which
Course, somewhere where I haven't been. There's a lot of places in South America that I want to go and play that I haven't been.
You already toured in South America? So
yes, but a lot, mostly in Brazil,
yeah,
and Mexico. I would love to go to, I would really, really love to go to like Argentina and Paraguay.
Anything planned for the tour to come? Not yet?
Lots of plans.
Yeah.
Lots of non-structured plans.
Right.
So far.
Okay, so we'll see that and we'll follow you on Facebook and website.
Absolutely.
And final question. When you were younger or a child or a teenager, what was the spark that made you decide to become first guitar player and then
two things.
Artist?
The first thing was that I watched Def Leppard. No, actually, I listened to Saltus of Swing with Dire Straits, the guitar solo. And then I went to my first rock concert with Def Leppard and I saw all these girls lining up to the backstage. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to combine this fucking guitar solo and then it's going to look like that. Haven't happened yet, but maybe.
We'll see. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
My pleasure.
My pleasure.